Welcome to the Drop Temp Coffee Podcast. I'm Tim.
And I'm Carrie.
And we're two coffee roasters in the Pacific Northwest talking about the coffee business, the joy of being an entrepreneur, all things coffee roasting, and our coffee culture, and maybe coffee itself. Thanks for being here. We appreciate you listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Drop Temp Coffee Podcast. We have a guest today we want to introduce first.
So we wanted to welcome our first guest in about, 2 years. We got Dan McLaughlin here from Golden Triangle Coffee Roasters based out of Cleveland, Ohio. And Dan, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Absolutely.
Super excited to do it. So before we get started, I want to make sure that I'm talking about our sponsors. And our primary sponsor is Primo Coffee Roasting Equipment. We love you guys. Thank you, Christian and Brandon. Secondly, we also want to say thank you to San Cristobal Coffee Importers. Thank you very much, San Cristobal. Jacob, appreciate you. And third, our newest sponsor, let's hear it, for Seattle Coffee Automation. The makers of the best bag filling machine in small applications we have ever seen. Works dependably, super great, and we earn more real estate. That is so funny. Dan, first and foremost, thank you very much for joining us. We're so happy to have you here today. So welcome from Cleveland to our home on the internet. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh my gosh, there's so many questions I want to ask you. But first and foremost, tell us a little bit about the roasting device that you're using and what it was that led you to choosing it. We'd love to hear it.
I roast on a Coffee Crafters Artisan XE that was then converted into an XL as a result of Ken Lanthrop's generosity. The XE was a 10-pound roaster when it first released, and then he modified his original design to be a 12-pound roaster. And released a YouTube video on the Coffee Crafters YouTube channel for how to turn your 10 pound into a 12 pound.
Wow.
And with air roasting, you can get quite a lot of coffee done on that guy. Good guy, Ken Lanthrop, huge fan of him just for the machines that he makes. It's a pure air roaster. It's not necessarily a fluid bed because there's no gas. It's a fully electric roaster.
Okay.
But it's a pure air roaster, no drum, no contact heat, really kind of all convection. And there's some drawbacks to it. There's a lot of upsides, though, that I am able to outweigh those drawbacks with.
Sounds like experience at the highest level.
It's kind of unconventional. I wasn't looking for a coffee shop job, and it turned out to be the only thing I've ever done. So when I was 15-ish, I would ride my Razor scooter down to the local coffee shop every day to get a cup of soup. And one night I strolled in there and manager said, "We're short staffed. You want a job?" And I said, "Sure." And they gave me a shirt and I started that night. And that's how I started working in coffee. That she ended up being a really terrible manager and one of the reasons that I wanted to exit the coffee industry altogether. And that was, 10, 11 years ago, or I'll be 27 this year. So that was, a little bit ago. And I stuck around in barista jobs, just kind of jumping around for a couple of years after that. And eventually I was just kind of bored, I guess, with steaming milk and pumping syrups at second wave shops. And I started roasting some coffee at home in a popcorn popper. And I was still baristaing during that time, but I was looking for an exit ramp from the coffee industry as I started to roast. I was doing it as a hobby, still kind of making a little bit of money on it, selling at farmers markets and the typical stuff you'd expect from like a little Midwestern roaster doing some cottage law roasting. But eventually for the coffee industry and me, it's kind of like whenever you're in the car and you're heading home and, you're listening to like a Spotify playlist, or for like older listeners, that's like the radio on your phone. And if
you're nice, be nice. I have a Spotify channel. Be nice. Oh my gosh.
You have a Spotify channel. Yeah.
oh my God. I love you. You have no idea.
But it's like, whenever you're listening to something, a really good playlist in your car and you're on your way home And you just circle the block a few times on the way because it's like, all right, let's drag this out and see where it goes. And I feel like I've been kind of circling the block now for 11 years, waiting for an exit ramp. And now I think that my tires are so worn down, I can no longer turn right. So I think I'm just kind of stuck in it now. And that's fine. It's a good industry to be in. It's a thriving industry. But yeah, it definitely wasn't where I intended to be, for sure. And there's even now there's stuff that I see where it's like, all right, I'm ready to leave this. And then I just don't. That's how I got here.
No, that sounds incredibly familiar in so many ways. It really does. Well, so we were talking about hot air roasting. Are you using a computer program to track your roasting at all?
So this is an unpopular answer. I used to. I would use Artisan, like many others. Then slowly, I just, one roast would go by and I wouldn't turn it on. And then another roast would go by and I wouldn't turn it on. And now it's been a couple years. And I am a full analog roaster. I roast, because the way that my roaster works is I can look straight down into it and see the beans. There's nothing between me and the beans at all. They're basically just in the room with me. They're not in a chamber like with a drum. So I have a lot of interaction with the beans. Something you wouldn't be able to tell quite as much from a drum roaster, like how much chaff is coming off of this Ethiopian 6 minutes in. I can tell where the roast development is at that point. And that's something that's not easy to do on a drum roaster. You can't really see that kind of visual stimulus, I guess, that would give you an indication of where the roaster's at. So I know it's a little bit harder to do that, but at the same time, it's easier for me to do that than stare at a computer screen. So I don't. I don't use anything. I know that if the roast ends when I need it to, if the temperature is at this point, at 6 minutes, at 5 minutes, at 4 minutes, it's all just up here, locked in the vault, which makes it very, very difficult to train anyone on my roaster.
So, by the way, we are 100% analog drum roasting infrared at our shop. So I have
beautiful,
completely analog.
Yeah, we're completely analog ourselves. I mean, honestly, I learned how to roast on a Probat analog and a Probat L12, and then roasted on Diedrich, and now we roast on Primos. I think software is important, especially when you're looking at, let's say you're sampling a new coffee, you got a new profile that you're trying to figure out and dial in. Of course, those data metrics are really, really important. But if you are if you're so familiar with roasting a type of coffee, especially as an owner, right? You're an owner and you roast the coffee pretty much every single day. You know the coffee, you know the roast, you know your roaster. I just don't feel the need of using really any software. And I can understand from a production standpoint with a bigger coffee roasting company, when you have multiple different people that are trying to have consistency of every single batch of roasting, that could come in. We're on board with you. Analog is fine with us.
I'm going to tell you, that's a very West Coast mentality for roasting. Because over like East Coast, you go into like New York and you say that, they will attack you. Very unpopular over here.
The East Coast is so far behind the rest of us. They're still doing French roast regularly. Come on. Come on.
There is nobody over here doing French roast. Maybe in Canada.
Oh, man. No, the Canadians are better than that. I'm telling you. That's why. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
That's bold.
Oh.
Canadians.
For the record, for those who don't know, a Canadian has won 3 of the last 7 Golden Bean overall championships from British Columbia. We got it here from Vancouver.
Just to be clear, there's a lot of roasters up there.
Yeah.
But what about folks from Australia? Like the Australians versus the Canadians?
Okay, so the Aussies are super talented. I have to give it some love to Australia. Melbourne's an amazing coffee city. It's got great people, but you're going to find people who depend on that computer. And that's the thing, the computer, I think, what happens if the computer goes down? What do? You just stop working? I don't think so. You know, analog's a great way to go, man. If you can get that airflow right, I'm telling you, I have the highest respect for that. Big time.
Big time. I mean, airflow is all we do. You lose loft in this guy. Airflow is like airflow. Any roaster, anyone I talk to that wants to get into roasting, it's like it's less about heat management and just more about keeping those beans breathing. I don't know. It's like one of the most underlooked portions of roasting whenever people romanticize the concept. We're like, you apply heat to beans, how hard can it be? And it's like, well, I guess it could be pretty easy, but there's a lot of random little things you're not thinking about, and how that heat is moving is one of them.
You brought a really interesting comparison between drum roasting and air roasting. I tell you, I love talking about the difference of those. But when you're using analog infrared, you can actually track the amount of time. You can check yourself on time pretty regularly. But we use our sampler trier a lot on our Primo. There is no result between air and infrared that's really all that different. I think the quality levels are super high.
What's really interesting about the trier, it's something that for air roasting, in my opinion, is it's something that wouldn't translate for pure air roasting. For a Loring, which is a hybrid, it would be fine, but for pure air roasting, it would make such a minor difference because there is no input you're going to really get from the air roaster with a trier. In terms of like the smell and everything, like there's just nothing you're going to get because air roasted coffee develops so incredibly slowly. It roasts very fast, but it develops so slowly, like frustratingly slowly. And so I was talking to someone about this recently because a trier is something that I haven't seen anyone use in a very long time, because it's just not something that's in my world. And I was talking to a friend and we saw this ad for some company somewhere on Facebook, and a lot of their visuals were very, very not great. And I sent it to someone. I was like, listen to this. The wording on this is ridiculous. And they pulled out the trier and I was like, look how performative this is. Like, they're not getting anything out of that. And he was like, we use our trier all the time. Oh, wow. That's an entirely different world for me. I would never even consider the trier to be a tool that we would use in the modern day for most roasters who are using a computer all the time. And he was like, oh yeah, if you're using the computer, you're not using the trier.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the thing though. I think it allows me interaction with the coffee. Kind of like, you know, you were talking about being able to look down into the beans. You know, I've seen a number of air roasters and I think you get every kind of sensory input through that type of perspective. I love that. It's one of my favorite conversational points on coffee.
It's really nice.
Yeah, honestly, the watching everything move around in an air roaster is just beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's pretty. It's one of my favorite parts of it is just looking down in there and seeing how stable the loft is, or if I'm roasting like a pea berry, how unstable the loft is. But it's really interesting. Like, I can always taste an air roasted coffee as opposed to a drum roasted coffee. Like, I can always tell. And, you know, there's a few ways that you can tell, but I just think it's so interesting how the actual application of heat makes all that difference. And whenever I try to explain it to potential customers, they're like, well, how different could it be? And then they try it and they're like, oh, wow, there's something missing, but there's other things that I feel like I've gained.
Now, I wanted to ask you a question, Dan, with air roasting versus drum roasting, right? Is one of the things that I hear is that when you're air roasting coffee, whether it's on a Loring or a coffee crafter's machine, that the air roasting gives a sweeter cup of coffee compared to the drum roaster. Correct me if I'm wrong. From what I understand, it's something to do with because of the sugars on the outer part of the bean. And somehow with the air roasting, it's able to evenly caramelize the sugars around the coffee bean as it's distributing. Is that true? Have you ever heard anything like that?
So it's actually a lot more simple than that. And anytime I talk about drum roasting versus air roasting, I always feel like I'm coming off mean about it because I am very pro air roasting compared to drum roasting. And there's a few reasons, and that is one of them. A lot of the differences between air and drum roasted coffee comes down to the actual trauma to the outside of the bean that you get during the roasting process. In a drum, you know, for anyone who's not super familiar with the process of a drum roaster, I know you guys clearly are, but the beans are tumbling around in a big old cast iron drum. And every time they hit the side of that drum, you're getting a little tiny microfracture. And as the bean heats up, it becomes a lot more fragile. And towards the end, the bean is covered in all these little tiny microfractures. And you're getting a lot of contact heat right on the bean, which can create a little bit of, the worst word I can use for it is also the best, but a little bit of char. And it's not a big deal, but it is noticeable. And in a lot of ways, that is a really nice addition to any coffee. It's something that is really tasty on a Colombian, any Colombian, really. It's something that Colombian coffees typically need, is that little bit of nuance you get from it. With air roasting, the beans don't come in contact with the heating element or any hot surface, really, that you wouldn't be able to touch with your hand for at least a second. You know, you don't want to touch it, but you can. And the chamber of an air roaster can get to about 900 degrees if you're going that high, but typically you level around 650. At no point in time is the bean exposed to anything but hot air. So the outside of the bean does not experience that trauma at all, which can give you a more even roast and doesn't really affect that outer coating of the bean at all. So, you know, it's not as much, there's the sugars on the outside. That could be, I don't have any data on it, but what I do know is the actual structure of the bean isn't as modified compared to how it is with the drum roaster. And it also really plays into how the coffee ages. Air roasted coffee degasses a lot slower because it doesn't have those microfractures, which is, like you can actually, so a buddy of mine was telling me about that. I had sent him some of that Nicaraguan gesso we were talking about. And I asked him like a week after it got to him, I was like, have you tried it yet? And he was like, bro, you air roast. I'm not trying that for another week and a half. I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. So what I did was I took a bean, I took it to a friend who roasts as well. And I had them roast it on their drum roaster. And I roasted the exact same coffee on my roaster, similar drop temp. There's no way to do a one-to-one between the two roast styles. And I put them in a sealed bag with no valve. And I just watched to see how they inflated. And yeah, the drum roasted inflated way faster than the air roasted. The air roasted coffee released gas at a considerably slower rate. So that sort of led us to the understanding that, you know, you could maybe expect your degas to take twice as long with an air roast compared to a drum roast. So there's a lot of little weird factors, and it all comes down to what you were saying, like the outside of the bean and how it's impacted by the roast process.
Yeah, that's really interesting, knowing that coffee that's air roasted versus drum roasting, how it off gases, it seems like it's kind of like a delayed off gassing process, which would be beneficial, especially if you know, are a roaster that sells coffee in the grocery store, because you can just, you know, bag it, seal it, put it on the shelf, and the freshness of that coffee can go a little bit further than compared to roasting coffee on a drum roasting, or, you know, on a drum roaster.
Yeah.
I have to ask this again out of curiosity. Off-gassing, there are a lot of arguments on this side of the Mississippi about off-gassing and how important it is. Personally, I like drinking coffee when it's ready. If it's coming out of the drum, it's going into the grinder for me, just my personal drinking. But how much value do you put on off-gassing?
A good bit. I will also grind pretty quickly after roasting, but I'll typically let those grounds sit for an hour or two just in the open air, you know, ahead of time, just so I don't get like an explosion in my V60 or something. But I'm not one of those guys that will send someone a bag of Ethiopia and tell them, don't drink this for 3 weeks. My recommendation typically for any customer is order the coffee, taste it when you get it. And if it tastes a little underdeveloped, a little, it's not there yet, let it sit for a few. But if it tastes good to you, keep diving in. Something I do is I'll use the X Bloom. If you guys are familiar with that guy, the big metal automatic pour over thing. I didn't buy that. I don't have money like that, but, it was sent to me at one point. I'll use that. And whenever I get a new coffee in, I will brew a cup of it with that every day and kind of get an idea for where that coffee peaks. And only because it's so repeatable, it does the exact same thing every time. You can't change anything. Well, you can, but it won't if you don't tell it to. So I put a little bit of stake in the off gassing, but I'm not as crazy about it as some people are, like the home baristas who are like, oh, I don't touch espresso, or I don't brew anything as espresso for at least 2 months off of roast. And it's like, all right, you're insane.
Why would you do that? It's coffee, for God's sakes. You can drink it.
The only reason I would ever recommend people to wait for the off gas to really settle is just for the sake of not having to redial in every 3 hours. That's it. But in terms of flavor, no, go for it. Just maybe extend your pre-infusion a little bit, or I don't know. There's a lot of ways you can start drinking that right away, but I don't know. A lot of home baristas don't want to hear that at all.
Well, a lot of home baristas are convinced that I'm going to say something people hate. And by the way, please give me an opinion on this. I'm a big fan of the Breville Barista Express. I've had one for 13 years. I've only had to change the burrs twice, by the way, in that entire time. I'm pretty dependable. I use it every day. But I really like the pressurized basket. I really do. Like, I think it just pulls really consistent shots. You know, what's your feeling on pressurized baskets?
I have no issue with it.
Thank God.
I'm not that guy. I am so incredibly not that guy. When it comes to coffee, I am so relaxed as a person. Like, I always try to, in terms of like who I am in coffee, I am not Dan when it comes to coffee. I'm soft porn when it comes to coffee. And like, he is my lizard king. Like, he's the guy who cares about coffee. I do not care about coffee as a person. I will pull a shot. I don't do WDT for my regular espresso. I'll dose out some grounds in my portafilter. I'll lock it in and I'll walk away for 30 minutes before I actually pull the shot. Like, I'm an animal when it comes to coffee. The other guy, he cares a lot.
You don't do the what is it, the Ross water, the spritzing of the
the
water.
Dan does care about mess, so that I do. Actually, not really, because my grinder, I use a hopper at work. I have a hopper in here, and I brew maybe one espresso. Well, I brew an espresso every day I'm here, which is only 3 days a week. And I know a lot of people are really anti-hopper unless you're in a coffee shop, which is, I'm not single dosing every single time I want some coffee. That's just not who I am. But yeah, I'll do RDT depending on what grinder I'm using. Like, sitting around me right now, I have 4 grinders at the ready because I'm so lazy when it comes to content creation. I don't want to move. I don't want to adjust the burrs every time I want to do a different brew method. So I have one grinder set up for espresso. One is set up for AeroPress. One is set up for pour overs, and one is set up for immersion brewing. I'm a very privileged man.
I actually had some questions for you, Dan. I think we're in all agreement that we are very passionate about coffee, and hence why we started this podcast. What was the deciding point for you? Like, at this point, here you are, you're discovering roasting, air roasting. What was that moment that gave you the aha to be like, I'm going to start a coffee roasting company? Can you kind of talk about what your journey was like going into that and how that got started?
So the number one thing was, and I remember it was 2018 when I started Golden Triangle Coffee, and I was working as a barista at a 2-person cafe in the Progressive Insurance headquarters, which was pretty nice. you knew exactly how many customers you had, and you knew when the rush was. You had free lunches, health insurance, vision, dental. It was beautiful. And I was working with this guy named Q, who I adore. And I remember I was telling him, I was like, we could do this and we could retire on this, because the, especially if we do air roasting, because at the time I knew one thing about air roasting was I like the coffee from air roasters, and it's very low cost of entry for air roasting. And I was like, this is something we could do. And if we do it right, we can make good money and live on it and not have to work for people like we work for right now. And I did take Q with me when I left that job. He works for me now. He is my rock. he's the one who does everything, and I do not. He's the one who does everything while I run around the city and do nothing. And I love him for it. He is the best man at my wedding, and he is the best man in my life. I love Q. I remember just telling him, like, we could do good money on this. And I did it kind of farmer's markety for couple years, just, you know, alone. He wasn't involved yet, while I was a barista with him. And then COVID hit, and we got laid off because the, you know, office is shut and everything, and Golden Triangle was already established, and I had, you know, a nice little customer base I was selling to, and it was good. It was all local. And COVID hit, and I was stuck at home. And I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm not really doing anything, so I'm going to really start focusing on this while I have, you know, government mandated time. And it was great. You know, COVID kind of tapered off, and I'm still here. And I have a big old customer base that I've developed from social media. And I guess I just kind of, if COVID didn't happen, I don't know if Golden Triangle would have grown the way it did. And, you know, I guess it only took a couple million deaths to get this thing off the ground.
Wow. Well, you really are from Cleveland. Let me just tell you that.
You know, I didn't realize, I should really clarify my origin. I'm from Pompano Beach, Florida, originally. And between the two places, I didn't realize how abrasive I am until I went to New York. And I learned just how soft people are. I mean, I was doing this thing. I was judging something, and one of the judges left, and I was like, man, that guy was a prick, right? And everyone there was just like, that's inappropriate. I was like, well, wait a minute. Aren't you like the, hey, I'm walking here people? What are you talking about? It was just like, what the hell? I didn't realize how serious some people are. It was just weird. I was like, man.
Oh, man. It just made me so happy. I've been exhausted all day. Now I'm energized. Wow.
And you know what? It's because Dan had that espresso shot, and like his coffee energy is like bouncing onto you. That's what's going on.
I'm gearing up for another.
Well, and I actually, you know, if you do that while we're doing this, I'm going to go get myself something to drink. So, you know, I might do that too.
You're more than welcome. I will pull another shot. I'm not.
you know, we'll get there in a sec. Let me just say that I think that motivating yourself to be you is fantastic. High respect, lots of points to you just for being yourself. God bless that.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, that's something you find, I think you see that a lot. And people just aren't themselves, you know? They feel like they need to act or be a certain way. I can't imagine doing that.
Especially in our industry, it's very, surprisingly, it's a very inauthentic community in our industry. Like, I'll be talking to people, and I know that they don't believe certain things, they don't practice certain things, and when you're talking to them, you can almost see the hand behind them guiding their mouth, like just puppeting them. And it's like, man, why don't you just say what you mean? I know that you don't care about this, and it's okay not to. And especially in, like, I know we haven't gotten into this, but I especially in the content creation side, which is like takes up half my time, it's such a shame, because there's people that I really respect and I really like, and then they get in front of a camera, they get behind a camera, and it's like, they're an entirely different person. It's like, you know, be authentic for the people that are watching your stuff, man. There's no reason for you to do this.
Oh, that's well said. Yeah, honestly, it's a pleasant surprise. I think we're all aware of those. Like, we all know the people in our local areas that have a problem with authenticity. Yeah. You know, I think that's great.
Okay, so obviously you have, what was the last time I looked, you had 1.2 million followers on TikTok. I was following you actually before you hit that 1.2. I think you were at probably, oh gosh, I'm trying to remember. It was definitely early 2020. You were at least at, I want to say, 100,000 followers at the time. I think there was a certain video that you did and it got you over that 1 million mark or something like that. Can you kind of walk through that journey of like how, kind of talking about your content creating journey, especially on TikTok?
In terms of like coffee content creators on TikTok, I was like the second one. Morgan Drinks Coffee was the first. And by the time I even started, she was already at like 1.6 million followers or something. She was huge. But aside from her, and she was only doing skits, she didn't do any informational. And I figured there's kind of a hole in the market here. Tanner wasn't making videos yet. Caitlin wasn't making videos yet. Nobody was for this topic. And so it was March of 2020. And before that, I had a TikTok account. I only really posted videos of like messing around at work with Q. And those are still up. If you scroll back far enough, you'll find them. And I started making some videos in my poorly lit kitchen. And I would just like explain, here's how to make a French press. Here's how to make a pour over with your Chemex. I had like three brewers with me at home. That was it. I would record the voiceovers in my car because I was super embarrassed to be making TikToks. And nobody in my family knew that I was making TikToks until I had like, you know, 200,000 followers or something. Like, I didn't tell anyone. It was maybe 6 or 7 videos in where these videos were getting like 2,000 views, 3,000 views, maybe the highest viewed video I had at the time was 9,000 views, and it was a video of me playing the accordion. And that's a little hidden talent for you. That's real Cleveland stuff. And so I was playing, you know, I was doing little numbers, but I felt really good about it. And so I made this video where it was just one long shot. It was like a 45-second video of me doing a sped up Chemex pour over. And I was pretty much just saying, like, you know, anyone watching these videos, thank you. I make these videos because I want to help people know more about coffee. And I think that the resources out there right now suck. I hate the coffee industry is a direct quote from that video. And I want to disrupt it in any way that I can. And this is how I plan to do that. And that video got like 500,000 views.
Wow.
That day, within the day. And I gained 48,000 followers from that video. Within a month of that, I think I was at 100,000. And then 200 came, 250, 310. And by 310, Caitlin had entered the scene. And I don't know, you guys know who Caitlin is, right? CC.Campbell. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I love Caitlin. Of everyone in the coffee content creator world and like the coffee industry as a whole, Caitlin is a true favorite of mine. Whenever we go to events together, we are attached at my hip and her shoulder. It is a blessing to be around Caitlin.
I actually met Caitlin when she was at the SCA Portland, and she was over, mm-hmm. I think it was a Brewista that she was.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that booth. And at the time, people were just walking by her and I saw her. I was like, hey, Caitlin, like, I follow you on TikTok. Like, I love your content. I saw the look on her face and how she had the biggest smile when I said that. Like, she's like, I'm meeting a follower. I don't know if it was maybe a lull that day or something, but man, she was so happy to see me.
She never gets tired of it.
Oh no. And I loved it. I took a photo with her and I told her, thank you so much. Like, keep pumping that content out. And it was great to see you two as well, Dan. That was really cool to meet you in person. And yeah, but I have nothing but great things about Caitlin. So I had to throw that in there.
She is the realest of anyone. I mean, she is just in love with her community. And she actually, she tells this story a lot where she started making content because a friend of hers sent her one of my videos and was like, you should just do this.
Oh, no way.
And she started. And I remember talking to her really early on and she was just like, I was telling her, I was like, you can moderate your comments. You can change like what people can say in your comments. Cause her comments are horrifying.
Yeah.
And she was like, do I do that? And I told her, I was like, absolutely not. The more hate comments you get, the more people that should see your content are going to see it. And it's paid off for her. she is doing very well.
Oh my God, yes.
I love Caitlin. She's just wonderful. And I don't even remember what I was saying. But Caitlin was really catching up to me on TikTok in terms of followers. And I really wanted to be the first of my group to hit 1 million on TikTok. And I was really, really passionate about that. Like, because Tanner wasn't there yet. Ethan wasn't there yet. Caitlin wasn't there yet. And that's what I consider to be my group. Like, the people who sprung up a little bit after me and that are I talk to a lot. And I posted a video and I was like, here's how to make the salted caramel. I have to do the soft porn voice. Here's how to make the salted caramel mocha because Starbucks not bringing it back this year. And that video got like, I think it got 20 million views.
Wow.
And, and within about 3 days, I shot from there to 1 million. Well, no, just shy. I was at 985 for like 4 months and Tanner was at 980 and it was stressing me out. And so I skipped the coffee altogether and I did how to make a Starbucks sells. And I did how to make a strawberry acai refresher at home. And that got me a little over, that put me over 1 million. I was very happy with that. But yeah, that's my content creation journey. It was just a lot of really, really harsh jumps from a little bit of virality.
That's such a cool journey that you've been on. You do a lot of recipes. You do the pumpkin spice.
My annual pumpkin spice. Yeah.
Pumpkin spice one. Yes. You do that. The crimp.
Much like Starbucks, I do that every year a little bit earlier too.
Yeah. I mean, it's not just like focused on like how to brew the coffee. You diversified and like you start. I feel like, Dan, you actually kind of like paved the way for a lot of people to make your own syrup recipes. And now you see people like doing their own unique twists on different syrups. I really feel like a lot of the coffee creators that are on TikTok and on Instagram, like you said, you know, they came to you for advice, especially Caitlin. And, you know, it's really amazing to see how much of an impact you made within the coffee community with the videos that you kind of pioneered and people followed and their success and your success on these platforms. It's really amazing. And Ethan Rhodes, Tanner Colson, right? Colson is the name?
Tanner Colson, Ethan Rhodey.
Yeah, Ethan Rhodey, yeah. And I remember those guys. I remember Tanner. Tanner was super early into his coffee creating. I think he had about 10,000 followers when I first started following him. And then he shot up. And how do you feel about the coffee content that's being created on TikTok?
I'm going to be honest. I don't see a lot of it. I'm so engrossed in the coffee community. I avoid a lot of the content surrounding it. But I do know that a lot of the stuff that I've done has stuck around. I try not to toot my own horn about this type of stuff, but I do know there are a lot of trends that I did successfully start. And I'm very proud of that. And there's a lot of things that I have successfully, sort of changed the market on, one of them being extract chilling. You know, if you guys remember all of the videos for extract chilling with people using a sink strainer and a whiskey ball, that was me. And that's like one of my proudest things that I did is, and I only did it because I saw the nucleus paragon, and I saw it on Instagram, and I went, that's interesting. And I clicked it, and it was like $250. I was like, oh, it's not that interesting. And I was like, oh, it's not statistic. And I was like, not a fan. So I was like, all right, well, let's just see if I can like ruin the market for this thing by showing people that it's literally just a whiskey stone. And I ran down to Williams-Sonoma, grabbed some whiskey stones, and that was it. And that, I mean, that's created an entire market that you scroll Amazon now, and there's a million options for whiskey stones with legs welded onto them. And, you know, I'm always glad to see stuff like that succeeding. I'm always glad to see any recipes that I've done out there in the world, any brew methods that I've done out there in the world. And I tell people all the time, if you want to adapt any of my content, any of my, anything I've created, please, that's what it's for. I'm not a copyright guy. I don't care about credit even. It's a courtesy if you give it, but this is coffee. It's beans and water. If you choose to do whatever you want with it, please go for it. I made my money off of it, if I made anything at all. If I post a video, I'm going to get the ad revenue, whether you get it too or not. And so I'm always thrilled to see anything I've done get repurposed by someone else, even in the real world. I can't tell you how many coffee shops I've gone into and I've seen like the compass that Golden Triangle made for adjusting extraction and stuff, and they just have it by their espresso machine. And it's like, that's awesome. Like, you can download it for free as a PDF on our website. It's just, you know, anything I create, I'm happy to see it thrive, whether it's under my name or not. Like, that's a blessing to me.
Oh my God, I'm so inspired by that. I think the ability to touch people's lives is pretty profound, Dan. I'm not going to lie. That honestly strikes a chord.
It's really nice too. Like, I definitely, most of my content is elbows down. So a lot of people, if they see me in public, they have no idea. But whenever I do get recognized in public, it's always really nice. It's a little weird a lot of the time. Cause like I said earlier, like, soft porn is Lizard King. I am Dan. So I'm not in that headspace. They'll be like, oh, I love your videos. I'm like, what have I met? Which ones? And yeah, there was one time I was in Philadelphia and I went into a coffee shop. I ordered a flat white and I left, and maybe 5 minutes later, I got a notification on Instagram, with someone messaging me like, hey, can you please come back and let me remake that? And it was just like, it was just really like, it's like, oh, well, how kind. And I replied, no. however you would have made that for anyone else, that's how you should make it for me. Like, that is, you know, I don't consider myself to be anyone special in the coffee industry at all. I just really, really like that I'm able to help people get to a point where then they can maybe get into some more advanced stuff that I am not interested in teaching.
I am at all. I admittedly am at an age group that doesn't concentrate on TikTok, rarely on online video, really.
I don't do much on TikTok as much as I used to. I really do focus more on Instagram nowadays because it is just a better community engagement platform. Like, you can really, you know, there's no limit on how long a comment can be, I don't think. You can really talk to people on Instagram compared to TikTok. I know there's a lot of talk about the TikTok ban. If it happens, it doesn't impact me. It would honestly make life easier for me because I could focus content on other platforms. But yeah, you're not missing anything on TikTok. honestly.
Well, how easy is the translation from one platform to another? How give me a little more information on that. I figure that you can film videos, you should be able to distribute them across a variety of different platforms. Is that true?
So yes and no. It really depends on the platform. Right now, Instagram, Facebook, they're on their own level. They do not care what the other platforms are doing at all. YouTube and TikTok are at war. And it's very noticeable for a creator because YouTube Shorts is good. It's a good platform. I've had really nice viral videos on YouTube Shorts. But a YouTube short can only be 59 seconds max. That's it. On TikTok, if your video is not longer than 60 seconds, you don't make ad revenue. And that's a problem. So the thing is with TikTok is I'm going to make every video over a minute long because if it goes viral, I don't want to, like, you know, if I have a video that gets 2 million views, I'm going to make $1,000, you know, like I'm going to make some money on it. YouTube, it's less guaranteed. You're not going to make quite as much, but you have a higher chance of going viral on YouTube. It's a whole thing. It's a balancing act that really sucks. So it's, you can definitely cross post between Instagram and TikTok with no issues. But whenever you get to YouTube, where a lot of people really want to grow, that's where it gets a little tricky.
Interesting. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah. Thank you for the input.
Yeah. And one other thing about TikTok and Instagram is that Instagram is a lot better for engaging with your local community because it is tied directly into Facebook.
Yeah.
TikTok is worldwide, whether you like it or not. So like whenever people are always, people will always ask me like, oh, how do I market my business on TikTok? And I'll say, you don't. Unless if you're a brick and mortar, there's no reason to. You're not going to get anything out of it. Instagram, you'll get a lot out of it.
So Dan, what can you tell us about the next steps or what's going on with Golden Triangle? You talked about opening up a cafe. Is that right?
So that's an independent project from Golden Triangle. I'm doing that with some partners here in Cleveland to sort of bring Cleveland into the modern age in terms of coffee. Like there's a lot of really wonderful third wave shops here in Cleveland. A lot of really, really good ones. Duck Rabbit is excellent. Rising Star is really nice most of the time. Phoenix used to be really, really good. And now I wouldn't recommend it to any tourist. Yes. But, you know, we do have a lot of really great shops. Ready Set Coffee is an excellent one. Lecco, excellent one. Anyone coming to Cleveland, these are your shops. But they're all very much grab and go, get in, get out. And I would like to bring something to Cleveland that is a little bit more New York-y, you know, and there's a market for it here in Cleveland. People want to be able to do things in the city. And being a Rust Belt former industrial city, there's not a lot to do. You know, we got a big old space and we're developing a coffee lab with all the amenities you would hope for from something that has lab in the name. You know, along with a full service cafe, no food, you know, pastry, coffee, that's it. We're going to focus on the simples. Along with a full service cafe, you can get in, you can get your hands on some interesting gear. We're going to be able to do guided brew things, like the type of stuff where if you buy a ticket for the AeroPress class, you're going to walk out with an AeroPress and the information to brew with it. It's just the goal of being able to inform people in person, get people to have hands-on interaction with things that they otherwise wouldn't be able to. And that's really our goal is to, I mean, you guys know a coffee shop succeeds not because of the quality of its coffee, but the quality of its community. And the goal is to create a wider Cleveland coffee community that people can actually come in and hang out and not only drink our coffee, but everyone in the city's coffee. You know, we can get Rising Star in, we can get Duck Rabbit in, we can share the space with people that I personally have great relationships with here in Cleveland.
We find ourselves trying very hard to do the same thing cooperatively, letting people come in and roast on our machine. You know, we have found some people really like to come in and get their hands dirty on a larger device, you know. I have just a lot of admiration for that. It's a great idea.
It's stuff that people, I don't know if people know they want it, but
they will.
I think from my experience, there are a lot of people that they don't know they want to know how to do these things until it's offered to them. You know, I have so many viewers that are just getting started as home baristas, and the very first thing they do whenever they want to get into home baristaing is they'll Google, you know, how to do a French press, how to do AeroPress, how to do V60. And the first thing they get is the most complicated video ever made on the internet. You know, they'll get stuff that is so above what is expected of someone who doesn't even have a temperature controlled kettle yet. And they'll see the video and they'll go, oh, all right, well, I got to buy all this stuff first. And now I don't want to do it at all. And so the goal is to, you know, bring more accessibility into the industry through information. And that's kind of what I've always wanted to do through my content. And this is just an opportunity to do it in person with my community.
That's fantastic. Can I ask you some granular questions about coffee preferences? You okay with that?
I am.
Okay. So I've been asking this of people that we've interviewed, and I've heard a great many different things. I want to know the best cup of coffee that you have ever had. What is the best cup of coffee you've ever had?
The best cup of coffee I've ever had wasn't as a result of its quality. And I think that This is definitely something more common in, global Southern communities compared to here. But I think the best cup of coffee I've ever had is less to do with the quality of the coffee and more to do with the experience I had while having the cup of coffee, where it's good because of the people I'm with, and it's good because I want it to be good. So the best cup of coffee I ever had was actually last year in Portland. And we were in Caitlin's hotel room. It was myself, Caitlin, Fernando Hernandez from AeroPress, and the an AeroPress that Fernando brought, and the Malkinig X54 that Caitlin and I snuck out of the building. no, they gave it to me. That's a really nice thing about being softborn and going to these events. And we're all sitting there. We're trying to like put the X54 together on Caitlin's Sheraton countertop. And we had just gotten these disgusting Chipotle bowls, that Caitlin was just loving. And we brewed up this, I believe it was some geisha that Fernando had snagged from some booth. And I just remember we were sitting there drinking the coffee, and I was drinking mine out of this little cup I got from the Time More booth. And it was just such a wonderful time to sit there. And I remember the coffee being so incredibly good. And I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it wasn't. I'm sure it was just fine. But, you know, it was just like, it was such a nice moment of community between, you know, three people that really love this and were just playing around. You know, we had never dialed in this grinder. The burrs were not aligned. We were using Caitlin's brand new Brewista kettle that they had given her. It was like a custom Brewista kettle. And it was just so much fun. And that made it the best cup of coffee in so many ways. In terms of quality, I couldn't even tell you, because some of my favorite coffee is from like Waffle House.
There is nothing like a great cup, like a coffee with a waffle. Nothing like it.
That's the thing is like, but I it's because the quality of a Waffle House coffee is disgusting. But the experience of sitting in a Waffle House at 2 a.m. with your friends is unmatched. And because of that, it makes the coffee, it elevates it to levels that are just incomprehensible to, like, you know, the elitist's mind.
So by the way, I didn't ask quality. I did ask the best. And for the record, everyone that we've asked that question to has said something very similar. You are not alone.
Wonderful.
Yep. Yeah, you are not alone. Not at all. I find myself thinking about it maybe slightly differently, but the best cup of coffee personally I've ever had is the one I shared my first date with my wife. I'm just saying, like, for all those reasons. For all those reasons. Well said, sir. Well said.
Dan, you have so much information. Like, you are just not only a wealth of knowledge, but obviously, like, your love and passion for coffee really shines through. And I feel like you have this amazing talent and gift in being able to explain coffee to people into such a welcoming, engaging way that makes people really excited about coffee and like elevating their coffee experience. Out of all the coffee content creators, like, you are so authentic to who you are. You know, you're not...
To a fault.
To a fault. But it's
To a big fault.
But it's not like you're trying to sugarcoat anything. You are speaking your truth, and people are really attracted to that. And, you know, honestly, like, you are definitely one of my favorite coffee content creators. And, of course, me seeing you, like, you know, take off the way that you did during the pandemic and stuff, it's been so awesome to see how you got started and where you are now, and all these opportunities and everything that got presented to you. You're going to be on your way to Expo here in the next couple of weeks in Chicago. So that's going to be great. You know, I'm really looking forward to seeing Golden Triangle really expand and seeing you grow, not only as a coffee content creator, but as an entrepreneur. I'm just so honored that we had the time to get to know you a little bit better, just learn about you more. And we really appreciate you coming on to our podcast here.
I want to add to that. Thank you for being the most pleasant surprise that we've had in quite a while. Really, honestly, thank you. All right, Dan. So tell us, what should entrepreneurs do to try to use content to help build their business? What would you suggest?
Whenever I started doing social media as a person, I needed to focus on one thing, is that you can get content from anyone. Anyone can put themselves in front of a camera in the same way that anyone can make a product. And it's a harsh reality, but that's how it is. They need to want to get it from you, whether it's the product or the video or the photo. They need to want it from you. So whenever you're selling a product, you don't want to sell the product, you want to sell yourself. And not in the kind of pitiful way that a lot of people will do it. And to be a little harsh, I've seen a lot of businesses make their mark on social media by getting on and saying, oh, well, nobody wants to buy my product. Here's how much money I'm losing. Support me. I'm a small business. Well, the reality is there's a lot of small businesses out there, and there's no reason for them to support you. If you want to sell a product, they need to know you, or they need to know someone that works for you. The best social media campaigns are run because there's familiarity there. So whenever I sell a product on any social media platform, I'm selling it because I am known to the audience and they want to support me and they want the product that I create. What I can recommend for any business is to find, if you're not comfortable with it, get an employee who is. There's lots of them, but you need to pay them for it. You need to pay them fairly for it, and have them get up there and say, here's how to do this. Here's how to do that. And, you know, don't be annoying about it. Don't put a tagline every other word. Make an authentic video. Say, this is how to do an AeroPress. Don't say, this is how to do an AeroPress at Golden Triangle Coffee. Don't say, this is how Golden Triangle Coffee pulls espresso. Say, this is how to do it. Build that trust with the customer. Build that trust with the viewer, where they're going to say, okay, I trust what you're saying to me, and I trust the content you've created. I've gotten good results from what you've said. I think I want to try it with your product now. I have built a pretty successful little coffee brand here with, and I have a tally board. I have directly promoted Golden Triangle Coffee to 1.1 million followers exactly 6 times. That's 6 videos out of, I believe, 3,300 that I have come out and said, Golden Triangle Coffee is the company I own and you should buy coffee from it. Every other sale is because I came out and I said, here's how to make cold brew. And the customer, the viewer at the time, goes, That was really good information. I'm going to go to his bio. Oh, he owns a coffee company. Oh, I can buy coffee. And then 3 days later, it's at their door. If you want to make sales and you want to use social media to do that, the best thing you can do is not try to make sales, but try to create a community around your brand and specifically someone within your brand. Coffee doesn't sell, community sells. And it's a real, you really have to trust the process because it's not instant. It's whenever you post an ad, and I want to, you know, also say Golden Triangle Coffee has never paid for a Facebook ad. It's never paid for an Instagram ad, never paid for a Google ad ever. And it's all been organic and not through Golden Triangle. Like Golden Triangle Coffee has never had a viral post. I have. And that's what drives sales. It's a slow sale though. You know, if you post an ad and people see it, you're going to get conversions a lot faster than you will building a community. And that's the issue a lot of people have, I think, is they'll try to build that community and it takes time and they give up and they go back to paying for Facebook ads. And I understand there's kind of an entry point. It's a little bit tougher because a lot of the content on the internet is really beautiful. My videos, some of my videos are in 6K. That's incredibly unattainable to the majority of people. Like there's a light behind me. There's one in front of me and there's one to the side. It's not a cheap process to make the quality of videos that some of us make. But if you have an iPhone that's within the past three generations, you can make a pretty good thing. And Tanner, a lot of his videos are still made on his iPhone and he has a lot of followers. I'm just saying, you know, you don't have to be perfect. You just have to put something out there. Every video you don't post is one that could get a million views. I mean, the extract chilling video that I did, that video has, I believe, across social media has something like 40 million views. And I threw it together on a Tuesday afternoon. I didn't look at analytics. I didn't look at my traffic and see, oh, are my followers online right now? Which you can do. I didn't look at anything. I hit upload and it took off. There's a learning curve. You have to learn how to hook people. You definitely don't want to post a video that you shot in a dark room. You know, you want it to look good still, but it doesn't have to be perfect. The imperfections are what make people trust you because you're a person. You're not a brand. Doesn't matter if you have two customers or a million, people are going to view you the exact same as Walmart. You're a brand. If you're a person with a brand, they're going to trust you a lot more.
I appreciate you sharing that because I know for me, I've tried to create content myself online. And sometimes I don't know why. I tell myself, don't look at the numbers. Like, don't worry about it. You know, then you get to a point where you're like, okay, I've kind of given up. And then, you know, life gets distracting and stuff like that. And I'll
give you a little piece of advice for avoiding that kind of burnout because it definitely comes, you know. And the best thing you can do is understand that if your video gets 10 views, 50 views, 100 views, or 100,000 views, it was seen by the amount of people who probably should have seen it. You know, at the very least, I post videos regardless of if I think they're going to do well or not. And I can tell you, my ego 2 years ago would not have allowed me to do that. There's a lot of videos that never made it that I feel like should have. They were good information for people that would have enjoyed it and would have learned something from it. And it, by keeping it in, it's almost a selfish act. If you have good information to share with people, there should be nothing keeping you from spreading it. I mean, I post incredibly unpopular things. I have a pour over recipe that people just hate, but the people that tried it love it because it is good, but on paper, it's terrible. You know, you're going to post things that are unpopular. You're going to say things that are unpopular. I've said a lot of very unpopular things, nothing cancelable, but very unpopular. You know, you should hear some of the things I've said. Well, you guys probably have, but I mean, I've been lectured a million times by brands. They're like, we would work with you, but you are incredibly volatile. It's like, yeah, well, what are you going to do? That's how it is. But if you have good information to share, get it out there. You know, there's someone that's going to respond to it. And there's someone that's going to respond to it. And eventually they're going to go, my friend would respond to this. And now they're watching it. And now a friend of theirs is watching it. And it takes time. I think Tanner posted I can't imagine how many videos Tanner posted before he hit 1,000 followers. Caitlin was an instant, you know, nobody's an instant success. I mean, I know I had like maybe 2 weeks of videos before I blew up, but that was COVID 2020. That's a very lucky time. But yeah, for brands especially, like, you know, don't make videos for your brand, make videos for your audience. And they will want to support you and subsequently your brand.
So Dan, can you let everybody know where we could find your coffee, find you on social media, where we can find your awesomeness at?
So I am Golden Triangle Coffee. Before you ask, it has nothing to do with the region or any of the various places around the world called Golden Triangle. It has to do with brewing. I am at Soft Porn. That's SoftPourn. On everything, you can find me at Soft Porn on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, PlayStation Network. Doesn't matter where, you're going to find me there. I cross post videos everywhere. It's mostly informational. I do the rare recipe these days, because I don't like doing them very much, but I do them because the audience likes them. But mostly informational. And you can also find links to any coffee I sell in any bio I have anywhere. We roast everything to order, air roasting, pure air roasting, none of that hybrid mess. We roast to order, ship it out to you here from Cleveland. I think our prices are very competitive. You can also find a wealth of information on our website, which is, I think, the part of the website I'm proudest of. You can go on there and download our coffee compass, which will help you diagnose any brew issues. Or alternatively, there's a little element that you can interact with where you can tell it if you're brewing coffee or espresso, and then tell it what's wrong with your coffee or espresso, and it'll tell you exactly how to fix it. So very proud of that as well. I coded that myself. So please use it. But yeah, that's how you can find me. I'm everywhere. I am all around. I am in your walls. So just find me wherever you want and check those videos out. I'm posting an iced coffee video tonight.
By the way, Dan McLaughlin, thank you so much for a fantastic couple hours. We appreciate that. Number one, number two, Cleveland does rock. I just want you to know that.
Yeah.
And, finally, I want to say a quick thank you to our sponsors, as always. So we're going to end this with Primo Coffee Roasting Equipment, our primary sponsor. Big support. We love you guys. We're going to also thank San Cristobal Coffee Importers. Coffee from Mexico that will blow your mind. And we want to thank our brand new bagging machine company, Seattle Coffee Automation, for one of the greatest little machines that we've seen ever. So thank you all very much for that. Dan McLaughlin, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. Carrie, how about you? Let's hear it.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Drop Temp Coffee Podcast. We hope that you enjoy this episode. If you like what you're hearing and you want to hear more awesome guests like Dan, please subscribe to our podcast channel. And you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And we have our YouTube channel here as well, so you get to see the videos. And we're also going to make sure in our podcast description and on our YouTube that we'll leave a link to Golden Triangle Coffee and links to Dan's social media pages, so you could follow him there. So Dan, thank you so much again for joining us and being a part of the show. And we would love to have you back on sometime in the future.
Oh, absolutely. You know I'm free.
All right. Thanks so much and take care.
Thanks for joining us. If you like our podcast or our coffee, give us a 5-star review whenever you listen to podcasts. You can order our coffee at blindcoffeeroasters.com or roastedmymom.com. Got a question for us? Go ahead and email us at hello@droptemp.coffee.